Hey, everybody. So before we start today's episode, this was supposed to be episode 2 when we originally recorded it. We were going to talk about Coheed and Cambria's second album, but very quickly, as you'll hear, I ended up needing to ramble for the whole episode, basically, and Alex was nice enough to play along. So here's kind of a special, different episode that we weren't sure if we were going to release or not, but we might as well. It's fun. So without further ado, please enjoy. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2, assuming that we ever put out episode 1. I think what we decided that we're going to call this thing is One More Songs, which we talked about in the last episode. I forgot about, but Alex mentioned that we talked about it. So what do you think? You think that that works? Are you happy with it? You didn't seem that pleased when I first mentioned it.
Yeah, I'm sorry my text message didn't elicit my... Got a name for our whole podcast show, Smiley Face.
Did you like it though?
Or? Oh, absolutely, yeah. No,
okay. Yeah, like I said, welcome to episode 2. We have done some extremely minor, basic audio upgrades, though, that make what I think makes a huge difference in the quality. You said it makes a big difference, right?
Yeah, I can. We ran some, you know, a whole barrage of tests before this to make sure everything that caused issue the last time around wasn't repeating itself this time. So I think it's definitely gonna improve in quality, and maybe you'll understand. The listener will understand a little more of what we're saying.
Yeah. So the last time our issue, well, we had many issues. First, we I guess this information is boring. People can skip ahead about a minute. But basically, we just ran both of our mics into your amp. Is that what it was?
Yeah, right.
You ran it from your amp into just directly into your computer?
Yeah, and it was my own stupidity in the fact that basically I worked on getting the compressor set up to get rid of all the peaks and work out the distortion and whatnot, because it's an amp modeling amp, so I had it on probably the cleanest setting I possibly could, but... to work out a compressor for this, you have to sort of test it against the dry signal. So you have to just go on, test, off, test, on, test, off, test.
You're trying to match up the signals to make sure that they're level-wise are the same?
Yeah, because the unfortunate reality about compressors is that they're one of the most misunderstood effects in all of audio, because essentially when a compressor is working right, you really shouldn't be able to tell that there's much working at all. So
I remember from back when we were playing shows, wouldn't compressors... for some reason, I remember people talking about compressors being like it would squash the sound.
Yeah. And a lot of radio stations and things like that, or television programs, definitely have that problem in the fact that they just butcher their audio with terrible compression. And
so is that the same, I guess... similar to this auto-tune thing that's been going on, where people are taking its original purpose and, I guess, butchering it, or taking its functionality and butchering it beyond its original purpose?
I wouldn't say that it's done that intentionally. I definitely think it's...
it's not like the auto-tune thing where I know what we'll do. We'll turn this to 11 and look at this cool effect that we'll make.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that. It's just a basic misunderstanding that... in trying to make the signal better, you pretty much just make it exponentially worse, to the point that your ears get so used to hearing this worse signal that you can't tell the difference. And ultimately, people will say it ends up sounding like you're listening to what you're listening to through, like, a cardboard tube held up to your ear. Okay. It's that type of horrible sound.
But like everything else, after a while, when you're listening to that signal, it basically just becomes... your new norm.
Unfortunately, yeah. So essentially, I got all that set up, and then go figure, in our ghettoized setup of me running into a guitar amp, running an amp modeler system, I forgot to turn the compressor on, Which,
so we went to all that trouble, and then when you were on, off, on, off, on, off, you accidentally left it off.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So mix that with the fact that we were running our signals into an amp and then directly basically into your mic line in,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
It just made for like the worst possible sound that I think you can get other than us using like a pair of gamer headphones or whatever with the mic.
Granted, that amplifier is specifically designed to be a recording microphone. It's designed to go directly into...
Oh, what type of amp was that anyway?
That was a Vox Valvetronics.
That doesn't mean anything.
Oh, well.
Beyond Vox, I don't
know. It's a... Not that anybody would probably... Like, if you understand this, then... You know, you probably come from the same background I do, but the preamp has a 12AX7 tube in it to the point that you're getting tube sound, but the power amp is solid state. So it's not necessarily designed for loud live performance, but you get that softer tube sound, the more natural sounding tube sound in your recordings without having to actually go to the trouble of having a tube amp and then working it through a direct line into your recording.
But the fact that it has a tube, doesn't that make it a tube amp?
Not necessarily. Traditional tube amps, if you're talking about like back in the day with the original Marshalls, tube amps were got their sound by overdriving the tubes because the power amp and the preamp were pretty much the same thing.
It's not the distortion that some pedals are today, but it's a distortion as a result of overdrive.
Yeah.
Turning the gain up too far.
And the master volume switch kind of ended all of that. You can thank Eddie Van Halen for that, for figuring out the attenuator situation where he figured out how to overdrive the tubes and really get that nice, sweet, crunchy sound without going to the maximum volume.
Without basically peaking things like we had, like we were having last episode, as I'm sure if people bothered getting to the end of, you can hear it just sounding absolutely awful. But that sort of thing. Interesting. So that's what we had last time, and this time we took, like I said, the very, very minor steps of trying to improve things. And basically, I just got a $50 Behringer 8-track or 8-input, 8-channel. There we go. Not 8-track. 8-channel analog mixer. And we just have our mics running into that. And then the master out into a compressor, which is, let me check. I don't even see it. Where the heck is the pedal?
Sitting right down there.
Which is on.
Even I can see it from my seat.
Which is on and then running into your line in. So eventually what I want to do is get some kind of USB interface. So then we can run it into your USB input, which I'm hoping will improve the sound. You can get those things for like, you know, another $40, $50, something like that.
Like we said, it's a journey.
But yeah, I more than you, but I was, you know, I'm such a perfectionist that I hated the fact that it didn't sound basically like, you know, we came right out of Abbey Road Studios.
Right.
And so that's why I decided to invest in this nonsense, which is not much of an investment considering it's $60 or something, but
hey, it's something.
Hey, hopefully it improves the sound, which might make it be more interesting to listen to.
It looks professional. I'm sitting here looking at it, and it can from
yeah, we look fancy. We got a little, a tiny little girly mixer with some XLRs running out of it, and yeah, we're super fancy. We're big time now.
Exactly.
So last time we
previously
talked
on
previously on we've got two songs left.
One more song. One more song.
We talked about the first album from Coheed and Cambria, and I think one of the big lessons that we learned, along with the fact that we need to invest in a little bit of audio equipment, was that taking the album track by track while sounding good at first, if it's just the two of us, very quickly we run out of things to talk about.
If you're just going to talk about the tracks themselves, then yeah, you probably have... Like, you can probably squeeze in a little less material. But when you're just talking about tangents and where are we going to go with this and just wandering wherever, you can easily lose track of time and where you are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I even necessarily could talk about every single track and every second of every track and just whatever. I mean, I don't know that I would have things to talk about, even with, like, my favorite stuff in the whole world. I mean, eventually, like we got to, it's just like... So yeah, the same basic things apply here. Try tilting your mic down a little bit so it's you're talking more directly into it. You see how it's kind of tilted up a bit?
Jeez. Let me try this.
There you go. That's Hopefully that makes a little bit of a difference.
Test, test. That's my purse.
So, like I told you earlier, and I'll tell it again because I think it's an interesting story. Before we get back into Coheed and Cambria and the actual topic at hand, last night Kaylee and I went down to Empire, which is a club that used to be Jack's.
Who's Kaylee?
I have no idea who Kaylee is.
Yeah, she's some girl.
Definitely not my whiff. But
my roommate.
Yeah. Yeah, she's my roommate. My roommate's gonna come pick me up. Oh, there's my roommate.
You mean
Shh, don't like my roommates.
You mean your parents?
We went down to Empire because a couple of yelly music bands that I've liked for a couple of years, I just discovered were touring together and playing down there, and so I figured it would be a good. I haven't been to a concert really in quite a while, or a show, I suppose. And so we decided to go down for that. And I'm telling you, so beyond the fact that I don't relate to that crowd anymore, like at all. Well, so it's weird. It's like a mixture of, I feel like I still relate to that musically, but then you see like, the people in the pit and just whatever, and it just looks like a bunch of little kids now. Yeah. Like, I don't know, it was weird. And have you ever been to Jack's
or whatever? When we were on our tour, that was supposed to be,
but you didn't actually
go
there.
That
anything?
Was supposed to be our final our
I was final explaining show, to no. Kaylee again on the way down there. She's like, isn't Jack's where you guys were supposed to play? I was like, yeah, technically we were supposed to play there.
In fact, we had all these awesome shows, and then the one place we were supposed to play, but it falls into the same.
Well, that
category.
Guy was a butthead anyway. Yeah. That owner, I mean, the fact that he sold the place and just whatever now, I did not exactly have the best interaction with him. So honestly, I kind of shot us in the foot because all it was just one of those stupid battle of the band type things. And, you know, he agreed to, or we went through like a third party promotion service or something.
I can't remember.
They're called Gorilla something, Gorilla Promotions or something, I'm sure.
Is it those two girls? The ones who usually rented out Jazz?
No, I don't remember.
Oh,
I'm
sorry, that was Sonar.
Yeah, and I don't remember what their names were.
Sonar in Baltimore, yeah.
They were nice enough chicks, I think. But, so basically I got us signed up for this Battle of the Bands. I thought it would be fun for us when we came back from our, quote, tour, just basically just like drive down to Florida and back in a couple of days. I thought it'd be fun, just an opportunity to play at Jack's. And the guy never bothered really putting any effort into it. It's one of those stupid things where like you have to sell 35 tickets or whatever, you're not gonna play. And so he didn't bother sending them to me, and I didn't bother putting any effort into trying to get them.
Right.
And so
well, you did try showing up there once to get them, right?
I tried a couple times showing up there, and they were always closed, even like it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was absurd. And I would try calling them, and I'd try doing whatever. So we were driving back from Florida that day, and I was like, we're supposed to play at Jack's tonight. I should probably call him to at least let him know that we're not going to have any tickets.
Right.
So I called him, and I was just like, hey, so we're supposed to play there tonight, and you wanted us to sell 50 tickets. The thing is, I never even picked up the tickets, so we're not gonna have any money for you. And he was basically just like, all right, screw you then, you're not playing, don't show up. Well, all right, fine with me, we'll go home then.
I remember you hanging up on that, and just, I remember being present for that conversation. That was not, not the way when you're relying on outside acts coming in, that's not exactly the way you treat your guests.
It's no surprise that he went under when he did.
Right.
Basically. But the place now, it's weird. They've kind of shrunk it down a little bit. Like they extended the stage and they kind of did whatever. So the place itself is smaller. But the reason why I loved going to Jack's was that it was weird. there was the floor, and then there was like a couple of steps up, and then on the outside there was like a place surrounding it basically where they had a bar with bar stools
Oh,
that you
okay.
just sat on. So basically you could sit around the outside of the, you've been to the 930 Club. Never mind. I'm trying to think of a place
Yeah.
that's similar like this.
I can
So
picture it.
it's like a balcony, except it's like a foot off the ground. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I
Like
got you. Yeah,
just like a
just
little
raised seating.
raised,
Yeah.
like a little raised area.
Yeah, I was in clubs in when I was living in Toledo that kind of had similar
Is that
setup.
T what the heck is that place called? Frankie's or something like
Yeah,
that over there?
Frank it wasn't Frankie's, it was I saw Poison the Well there with
What?
my sister Laura. Poison the Well and Silverstein were on tour there, and I took her there for her birthday.
That doesn't make a whole heck of a
I
lot of
can't
sense, but
it was Jed's,
oh,
like the chain Jed.
I
They had a
haven't seen
venue,
Jed's.
and that's where we saw them up in Toledo. But yeah, I played Frankie's out there too.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was about like 110 degrees at night, and you had to play the set while the door was open with a massive industrial fan blowing, even though it didn't help. I had my gym shorts on, my Michigan Spartans t-shirt, and we were just miserable the whole time because it was the most eclectic set I've ever played, because it was just like jazz standards mixed in with this indie rock I had mixed in. So we had long extended solos on top of just poppy beats and delay soaked like indie stuff, singing about like Twin Peaks and whatnot.
I did not realize you played there.
Oh yeah.
You know, a lot of famous acts have played there. Like,
Icecapades.
all I remember is anytime I look, so when I'm looking at tours, bands that are on tour now, I always, where they're playing in Ohio or in Detroit or something, always kind of catches my eye. And it's surprising that a lot of bands still go through Toledo, not
Yeah,
still, but
yes.
go through Toledo. But Frankie's, I think, is that really, that's what it's called, right?
I'm pretty
Frankie's?
sure, yeah.
That's the one that's right over the river,
Yeah.
basically.
Oh,
Okay,
yeah.
yeah.
It's a tiny, tiny place, but
Yeah.
the venue itself is tiny, but they have like an offshoot room away from the stage.
Is it like Sonar where they're like, we're three clubs in one?
Pretty much,
Big
yeah.
club, two tiny
Yeah, it
clubs.
was basically like two clubs and then an outdoor patio in the back.
Oh,
So,
that's weird.
yeah.
I don't remember what I was talking about before, though. It got me off on that tangent.
You were down at Jack's last night.
Yes, I was down at Jack's. Oh, that's right. Okay. So anyway, what I the reason why that's like my favorite place of any of the places that I can think that I've gone to, either played or seen, which I mean, it's funny to talk about played, considering
Well, we played them.
well, it's funny, like you and I sit here and talk like we're these, like, well, at least I do, or I feel like we're going to be viewed as like, we're like these old rock stars, or like Keith Richards and stuff, talking about our heyday and whatever, when really it's just like,
We're garage band
you know, we
veterans.
played a couple of mediocre clubs where
Yeah.
nobody knew
Hey,
us.
it seemed epic at the time.
At the time, it was awesome. And, you know, now, like, you know, guys from other bands that were playing. We were playing within that scene or whatever, have gone on to actually do like legitimate stuff.
Yeah.
Who I'm sure, you know, if any of them listen to this, they're probably just like, what the heck are you idiots talking about? You
Right.
guys played Sonar like three times and what, like, what are you talking about? I've played festivals to like, you know, 10,000 people. What are you talking about? You played to like, you know, the little kids of Hagerstown a couple times and
Right.
whatever, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, we still did more than what a lot of people can say they
Yeah. I
did.
mean, that's what specifically with the band we were in together, our main band, we kind of all had this unspoken pact where the moment it stopped being fun, that's when we realized we were going to all just kind of go off our separate ways. And that served so well to keep everything light and everything super engaging, because nobody had any pretensions there about making it big. We said, if it's going to happen, we'll worry about that when it happens. But in the meantime, if the moment it stops being fun to just jump around and act like idiots on stage, and that's how we're able to still, talk to each other to this day. That's
Right,
how you
right.
do the whole rise and fall of the band act, is that you all have an understanding about that.
Well, that's where, from that mentality, that's where our this one more song
Yeah.
thing comes from. It comes from us being a bunch of idiots and just having fun and hanging out.
To our detriment, I'm afraid, because while all the other
absolutely to our detriment.
Any band that had a show, they were out promoting themselves. They were out mingling. They were getting to know the other bands. We were the idiots hanging out by our merch table, laughing at a bunch of inside jokes.
Right, but like not talking to anybody at our merch table. Just like sitting around in a circle at our merch table, just like, you know, doing a bunch of stupid Venture Brothers stuff, and like, it's no wonder that nothing happened. But
I was just saying, wondering why nobody would ever come talk to us, or why we never got better gigs.
Exactly. Okay, so for the 400th time, me trying to finish this thought, that's why Jack's is my favorite place that I can think that I've been to, because I was never one. So if I got to see a band that I was just like huge into, for example, like Above Your Head there, you've noticed that before, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I collected concert tickets from shows that I went to for probably the better part of a decade, maybe something. Most of them are 930 Club, but there's like stuff from Nation and a bunch of other stuff on there. But
yeah, I'm seeing one here from 2004 and all that. Yeah.
There's stuff like
a Coheed ticket from 2004.
Actually, is there really?
Yeah, at the 930 Club.
I saw Coheed at the 930 Club in 2004.
October 10th, yeah. Must have been a good show if you...
Does it say who else was on that bill?
Let's see.
I don't remember seeing that at all.
No, I don't see any other... Whoa, don't see any other supports
it's
there, no.
It's just Coheed.
Pretty...
But, so it'd be
Coheed
stuff like...
Coheed special guest star Cambria.
Right, yes, exactly. When I remember seeing... like The Starting Line or Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah.
Or I remember seeing Thursday there.
Pretty sure you saw everybody you've liked at one point or another at 9:30.
Well, they're for a little bit, or at Nation, one of the two. But with that stuff, I would have no problem just going down and, you know, waiting in line for whatever and then staying smashed up against people for like 9 hours to do all this stuff. But very quickly, if it wasn't a band that I really cared about too much, or I wasn't like super into, or I just wanted to pay attention to, or even when I got a little bit older, I didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to stand there and watch the band play. And one thing I loved about Jax was that you could go inside and sit on the side, like on these benches or on these stools, basically like at this surrounding bar area and sit there and not have anybody run into you and just be able to watch the band.
Designated adult watching.
Essentially,
stations.
Which it wasn't before. When it was Jax, the sides were all crowded and all whatever is crazy. But last night, to make it even better, the one side of it is part of the bar area. So you have to be over 21.
Oh, awesome.
So it was literally like me, Kaylee, and this dude that looked like Brandon from college.
Oh, nice.
And then like nobody else. There's just nobody else. It was fantastically amazing.
Greatest setup ever.
But it was also funny too. I was thinking on the way out last night, if I could see a picture of myself from like 2004 going to one of those concerts, and I compared it to what I looked like last night, it would just... I want to punch myself in the face.
It'd be like Dorian Gray looking at his picture.
Yeah. Not really with an age thing, but more with a, what's wrong with you? You're not looking all seen and all like whatever anymore. Like last night, my default go to this thing was I wore those like light red / dark pink. Oh, the shorts that I wore today.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, I wore that with this like baby blue polo that's got little whales all over it and just whatever, and it didn't even cross my mind until I got there, and then I'm looking around with all these kids and just like all black and like tattoos and whatever.
There was a time when I would have had to get dressed up for going to something like this.
I was just like, oh, I both felt awful and like I didn't care one little bit at the same time. So
I'm on a web cartoon thing right now, web comics, and Chris Straub has a web comic for his particular Gagaday site, Chainsaw Suit, and it's him at one of those clubs with rave lights all over the place, and it's him walking up to the bar and going, "Hi, yeah, could I get a gun to shoot myself? Because I've just realized that I am way too old to be at things like this." $12, sir.
Oh, it was a horrible realization. And, like, every once in a while when I'm at those type of things, I also get the, I think that The Lake, our band that we've been talking about, and Shai Hulud had a lot, or have a lot in common, or I guess us and Matt Fox specifically. You know Matt Fox,
yeah,
the guitar player. Yeah. You're familiar.
Oh, yes.
I'd always, like, I found out about Shai Hulud in, what, like, 99, I think, and I'd always wondered why they never really got any bigger than they did.
Yeah.
Anytime I've gone to see them, I've gone to see them at different places around the country. It's just worked out or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's always like 10 or 15 people that are there that are really hardcore Shai Hulud fans, and there's nothing. And I mean, they're just like the best band ever to me. I just love them. They're fantastic.
They pretty much created the term metalcore.
Yeah, which is funny because I don't associate metalcore.
Well, to them, it was a joke. To them, it was the whole, this is hardcore, but oh, that was metalcore. Yeah, it was more about the suffix of core being added to, right, something more than a legitimate genre mixing. So for them, they felt like their made up term has been completely taken out of context. There's an interesting interview with Matt Fox where he talks about it that way.
Maybe did you just read that recently? Because yeah. I think that I came across that or something like that recently.
Yeah. But actually, I bring that up because they are incredibly influential, and you're right. It's kind of the do you remember the movie Anvil? The story of mm-hmm. Anvil, how they were just loved by all these big acts, but again, they put out all these albums but never seemed to get any sort of attention, not even underground attention. So you just wonder,
just nothing.
Yeah,
but even, I guess, culturally or personality-wise with Shai Hulud, where they just seem, Matt Fox especially, and the core guys there, Matt and Matt, both just seem super nerdy. Mm-hmm. Like they just want to make a bunch of inside jokes and have fun with their friends.
Right.
As opposed to really trying to like super fit in. Meaning, I see those guys as being the ones that just kind of hang back at their merch table doing whatever, like, similarly to how we did. And so it doesn't really surprise me.
The right people believe in their music enough to give them money to keep doing it. They just personality-wise don't fit in with that scene. They just happen to make stuff that the right people recognize is worthwhile. So they're able to make
it. I think Matt Fox is going on... He's got to be 35 at least, if not pushing 40.
Jeez.
And he's still playing these things. Like, Shai Hulud very easily could have been on the bill for this show last night.
Hmm.
And, well, I just mean, like, you know, yelly music-wise, whatever.
Just fit in with the ticket, yeah.
And I could see why Matt, or I just kept seeing this, oh, that's why Matt Fox has these, like, doesn't connect with these people, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's just like, he's this, like, I love playing this music, but I just don't quite understand your 19-year-old attitude anymore. Like, it was crazy last night where it was, like, we went and saw the last two bands. And so we got there, we saw the first band set.
Who were they again?
Counterparts and 100th.
Mm, okay.
Which I don't expect anyone to really have
they
any
might be
clue.
Surprised, but
or really. But in between their set, it was funny because the Counterparts ended, and as soon as their last song stopped, it was the stampede for the door for all the kids to run outside and go and smoke their cigarettes.
Right.
I felt like it was 2005 again, and I was in any club anywhere USA. It was just, it's ridiculous how much things change and how much they stay the same.
Right.
What's that? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Yep. It was just fascinating. It was a whole new generation of kids doing exactly the same things.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know. It was very, very surreal to me.
Well, I remember driving back from California. I know we keep talking about, somehow keep ending up talking about this again. Just getting out of into the east end of California, more into Nevada and all that, and just driving through some random little like oasis town in the middle of the desert. I remember driving past a baseball field and just looking out there, and there's this little, just any other goth kid I would see anywhere back in Hagerstown, just sitting there, just in all black in the middle of the Nevada desert, and pointing him out to you and being
I remember that actually.
like, "Oh, wow, he looks exactly like somebody from there." And we're just get on this conversation how, yeah, it really doesn't matter where you go, you're going to get this anywhere you go, and it's just going to keep reproducing itself generation by generation.
Right, and it's not so bands like the bands we saw last night thrive, or not thrive, but they survive on the fact that they can book themselves at 50 different clubs around the country,
Right.
and at each one of them have like 20 core people that show up.
Yeah.
And it's not a huge following at all, but it's just this tiny little pocket of the exact same people just in different locations. And so it's like, I'm gonna get $500 here, I'm gonna get $500 there. It's not a huge amount, but it's enough to make it, I don't know, to sustain them,
Yeah.
I suppose. So
You make enough money to sustain yourself that way. I mean, you more power to you. They're living the dream. At
or
35, Matt Fox is still living the dream and still doing what he loves, you know? I
absolutely.
can't deny him. Still, man, I'm sorry. So has that turned you off from going to shows now permanently, or are you
No,
still?
not at all. Absolutely. Like not in the least. I stopped going. Okay, so one of the other funny things I kept thinking was like I both belong back in this high energy scene. Like
Yes.
I so many times, Kaylee a couple of times last night, because I guess she could see me like having fun and sort of doing my own dumb singing along from my bench on the side,
Yes.
like an old man when I used to be, right in the middle of all that. And a couple of times she would just be like, "Why don't you go in? Just go in there. Just whatever." And I had thought the same thing too, but just like I can't quite. I'm just kind of beyond that. But the thought that I kept having was, I belong in there,
Yeah.
but at the same time, okay, so let me see if I can think of how to phrase this. With my stuff with the Masons that I do now,
Yeah.
you've been to a couple of those things. Could the events at a Masonic lodge and the events at one of those hardcore shows be more polar opposites? Like I just kept thinking last night, it's like 10 years ago, being smack in the middle of that is exactly what I wanted to do
Right.
to have fun. And now, me sitting being dressed up in a tux, that's what I like to do for fun now.
It's that horrible feeling of knowing you're too old for something, even though you just don't want to admit it. I'm with you. I feel like I still belong in that. That's why I still like peruse Craigslist ads from time to time, looking at musicians and looking for people who want, looking for guitarists, looking for other musicians or whatnot, people to fill up their little garage bands. And it's like I don't feel older. I don't feel more mature, but then I know I would stand out in a scene like that. If I were in a club like that in that your situation and I was being, you know, sort of egged to go join them and have fun at that, I know I would stand out, even though I know I don't feel that way. I feel the same way they do about the music.
Oh,
Maybe
it's
I
the
don't.
stuff that you hear about, like you talk to any of our parents, anybody, any of our friends' parents, whatever. Excuse me. You talk to them, and anybody that you talk to, honestly, you can even talk to an 80-year-old. I've actually talked to some of the guys at my lodge who are in their 80s or whatever, and they say in their heads they still feel like they're, 20,
Yeah.
25, which scares the crap out of me. The fact that if I'm feeling like this at 30, it's only gonna get worse.
Yeah.
Like I'm only gonna be 35 still feeling like I should be, at that
Yeah.
stuff. I'm only gonna be 40. And yeah.
But it's fortunately having that mechanism that stops you, that says,
Don't go run in there.
Yes, don't go. Don't jump into the pit.
Don't be that weird, creepy old guy jumping on all the 21-year-olds or the 19-year-olds.
It's that loop that says, point A says, I belong in that pit. Point B says, but I'm this old. Point C says, but I don't feel this old. Therefore, I belong in the
right,
pit.
Exactly.
It's this horrible cycle.
Exactly. And yeah, it just, it's absurd. So it's this weird sort of, I don't know if dichotomy is the right word, but it's like, I don't quite fit in to the young thing anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't want to, but I feel like I'm still too young to fit into the older stuff that I'm involved in now at the same time, even though I love it. It's just weird that it's like, if you had talked to me, you know, five years ago, 10 years ago, and you said, all right, so when you're 30, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be learning these, you know, 30,000 words to memorize all of this weird ritual and these speeches and things so that you can go lead a Masonic lodge and initiate guys and perform all these degrees and whatever. I'd have been like, what in the heck are you talking about? That sounds awful. But now it's like, that's what I'm into. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, it's like 10 years ago, like you were saying, how the scene was everything to these kids, to us. That's all it was. It was, you got the tattoos, you wore those tight jeans all the time to every function because that's who you were. That's how you identified yourself. And then to find out, for me, things like when I find out that people like Jeff Beck or whatnot, Jeff Beck is like obsessed with classic cars. He loves working on classic cars. Or Jimmy Page had his whole like occult bookstore fiasco with that. Or they just had interests outside the music scene. And it's like the genuine people that you all aspired to at some point realized this is just a part of me I have to compartmentalize.
You can understand why they went on stage, they played their music, they had fun, and then they disappeared.
Yeah.
Or they went into the studio for a little bit and they had fun doing their own thing there, and then they went and disappeared and did the other things, the other aspects of their life.
It's that detachment. It's that ability to really just sort of section your life. And to think that in a way that sounds like that they're the ones, they're the innovators, they're the ones that they all look up to. Is that just talent? Is that just like the ability to split your mind up and say, I can be innovative and groundbreaking in this particular part of my life, music, but I can also step away from it to the point that it's not what I define myself by.
Right.
And it almost seems like just like a contradiction, a joke in the universe that the kids and whatnot and their youth with the most energy and whatnot never seem to really be the ones who like break new ground. It's always the elders who don't dedicate their lives to it who are still the ones that are revered or whatnot.
I suppose. It's the maybe it's like they're innovators because their entire life is not that.
Yeah
You know, they're able to create things because they're able to detach themselves from it a little bit, like you mentioned with the thing with the tattoos and people like making it their life and whatever. Another sign that I'm getting old, which is just awful. I'm telling you, around every corner, it's just like, hey, guess what? You're getting old. Congratulations. Last night, there's a band Kaylee and I went to go see at Jack's a couple months ago, but they were sold out and I didn't bother buying tickets ahead of time. So whatever. Amur, that's just a...
Oh, okay. I know them.
Whatever. They're nothing special, but their singer has this tattoo that it's a skull right in the middle of his neck, like right over his Adam's apple.
Yeah.
And he's got like wings coming out from it. So it's this big thing here. And I just kept thinking, you know, this looks like it would hurt so bad. This makes, you know, someone look absolutely, it just,
yeah,
it takes the whole image that you're trying to create for yourself just through the roof. But the guy from 100th last night has something similar like that.
Okay.
But it's bigger. Like, he's got, I don't know what's in the middle here, but he's got wings that go up to the bottom of his ears.
Under his jawline.
Like, yeah, they follow his jawline. It starts basically as Adam's apple and just covers his whole neck, and there are wings that just go out and then up to the bottom of his ears. And all I kept thinking last night was, you are never going to be able to do anything professional ever for the rest of your life because you got that tattoo.
You think that tattoo says hardcore, when to anybody over 25, all it says is unemployable.
Good luck getting a job.
Yes.
Right. And it's funny because I keep going back to this, but that was awesome. I mean, I never got any tattoos because I always, I was always like, I don't know that I'm going to like this enough to want this on me.
Yeah.
10 years, 20 years, 30 years from
now. I've only had that once. I know some people say that if they got a tattoo, the only tattoo they would get would be the names of their children.
Right.
That I can understand. I have one that I don't remember if I've ever told you this.
Maybe. I don't think.
If I got a tattoo, it would be of a little high school.
Never mind. Yes, you have told me about
that. Okay. Little high school is a famous weather vane of a German soldier that sits on Town Hall in Hagerstown, Maryland, my hometown. And if I, that's something that I will always carry with me. If I ever got a tattoo, I would get the symbol of my hometown.
You have mentioned that before.
Yeah, I think I could live with that. I haven't yet. I'm with you. I haven't had any tattoos. I haven't had any piercings, unlike you.
But that's why I got piercings, though. Like, yeah. the whole scene when we were doing that, and it is now, I think just that whole scene is piercings and tattoos and just doing whatever. And I never got tattoos because, like I said, I didn't know what I was going to like. It's permanent. It's whatever. But piercings, I was like, eh, I can always just take them out.
Yeah.
And then they're out. Which is why I got my lip pierced. I got my nose pierced. I did make the mistake of stretching my ears out a little too far.
I remember that.
I took it a little bit too far.
Well, you skipped a gauge, didn't you?
I skipped lots of gauges. Yeah. So how you're supposed to do it is you're supposed to take it up a gauge at a time, and it's just little increments.
Yeah.
You just put it in, and it just stretches it out just a little bit. And then you let it in there for a couple weeks until it gets used to it. Your ear gets used to it, gets adjusted. And then you take that out, and you put in the next gauge just a little bit. It's just little increments, and it takes a really long time.
Yeah.
I was too impatient. I didn't want to do that. So what I decided that I was going to do was, I'll just force it in there. Basically, what I would do was I would put one in, leave it in for like a couple days, and then basically just get impatient. And so I'd either buy the next one up or I'd buy a couple of them. I don't think that I really skipped too many as much as I just didn't give it enough time.
No.
But all I would do, I would just sit there and just work this thing into my ear. Just stretch it out. Just do whatever. I mean, it's gross. It's a gross story. But I remember like one time I did that. It's funny. This is two episodes in a row now where I've talked about Joe's UMBC dorm room. I don't know why so many significant things happen in there. But I remember sitting in there at their sink, at their mirror, just like working this thing into my ear, and it just getting all bloody and gross and like not what it's supposed to do when you do it right.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was just like, I'm just going to get this thing in here and it's going to be awesome and just whatever. And all I essentially did was just like tear up my ear.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it with the fact that, you know, if you, you know, people take a look at me, they're bigger than normal piercings. They're not huge. Like, they did shrink down a lot from where they were.
Yeah.
But they're still a little bit bigger or whatever, to the point that some people, if they pay enough attention, will ask about it.
That's the closest thing to a tattoo.
Right. But that's an, I just, because a mixture of I stretched them out a little bit too far and I also ripped my ears apart.
Yeah.
You know, this is gross, but I'm sure that I took a little bit of a chunk of the actual, like, flesh out of my ear. Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even that I stretched out what was there, but that I kind of, like, tore and probably, like, got rid of some of the stuff that was supposed to fill this back up.
Yeah, it'll just never heal properly.
So, but yeah, so I just kept thinking with this guy last night. I was like, you think that this is a good idea, And right now, it seems like an awesome idea. Like, you look totally cool up on stage with this huge, terrifying neck tattoo and whatever. But you're not Jimmy Page.
Right.
You know, you're not Dave Grohl. You play in a, you know, not no name, but very low no name, like, for lack of better terms, like a mediocre yelly music band that plays to like 50 people. That's going to last you what? Like another couple years at the most? And then what the heck are you going to do? You're going to go, oh, hello, hiring manager at, you know, Citibank. I would like to work in your corporate office. Please disregard the huge neck tattoo I have all over my face.
You can just see him, like, you can just see him, like, 5 years from now sitting in the interview being told you didn't get the job or thank you for coming in. And well, then him looking at the hiring manager saying, well, what was it? What? It's like, do you have any advice for me? Anything? Was it wrong with my resume? It's like, son, I have one word for you. Turtlenecks.
And Kaylee was pointing out, she, sorry, I'm trying to look up a picture to show you.
No, that's cool.
She was like, yeah, I can understand people getting tattoos on their chest, on their backs, and on their arms. She was like, she's even more okay than, I don't like tattoos in general, but she was like, I'm even okay with people getting them down their arms and their sleeves because worst case scenario, you just have to wear long sleeves
right.
in any kind of job setting.
Yeah.
But people that get them on their hands, people that get them on their faces and their necks and whatever, it's just like, there's nothing you can do to cover that up. You know, you're just stuck with that.
You have officially ruined your life from here on out. I mean, there are very few ways that you can just officially ruin your life in a certain way. I mean, it's funny because you're sounding exactly like the red versus blue PSA from season one when they do their thing on tattoos.
Okay, funny. I just looked this up. Yeah. I looked up the guy and I found an awesome picture of it, and he's wearing a Shai Hulud shirt.
Hey, there you go. So,
but anyway, what are you saying?
Can't be hating on him too much.
Oh, no, their music is fantastic. But yeah.
Oh, so no, I'm just saying they had their version of arguing for and against the tattoo is take your age and subtract 10 years. Were you smart back then? No, you were an idiot. And if you had done something to yourself 10 years ago, would you be happy with it today? And it's like, probably not. So will you be happy with something you do today 10 years from now?
No.
No. It's that idea that like every 3 or 4 years, I look back at myself and say, boy, that guy was an idiot back then. But now I have it really figured out. Now I have people figured out. There's these kinds of people and these kinds of people. The world works like this. The world works like this. And now I have it all figured out. And I never for a minute think 3 or 4 years down the line, I'm going to be looking back saying the same thing about
myself.
It's
hilarious you bring that up because in addition to all of the other things that have come about with my existential crisis of turning 30, it was that same thing.
Oh, really?
I was talking to Kaylee and I was like, when I was 25, I was looking at these idiot 20-year-olds and looking at all the stupid mistakes they were making. And I was like, what the heck is wrong with you people? Like, you people are, you're making dumb mistakes. You're acting like idiots. You don't know what the heck you're talking about. You have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
You think you do. You have no idea. And I did that when I was 20. I'd be like, oh, you stupid teenagers.
Yeah.
You just got your license. You're all cool. You know what's going on, whatever. You have no idea what's going on. And then, like I said, I did that at 25, whatever. And now I do that now where I look at these kids and I'm like, you do realize that there's a whole lot more going on than just this little bit. But then I had that exact thought where I was like, oh, I've been doing this my whole life. What the heck am I? What am I doing now that I'm going to think about in 5 years from now and 10 years from now that I didn't know anything? I must not know anything now. Like, what, like at what point do you know? Do you know anything? One of them is Warren Buffett.
He knows what's up. He knows the
story. I think Warren Buffett.
Embarrassed to admit this, my mind immediately thought of Jimmy Buffett.
No, not Jimmy Buffett. I had to think. You can't give me crap anymore for that Martin Scorsese or whatever crap I did in the first episode.
Okay. At least
when you get Warren Buffett and Jimmy Buffett mixed up.
At least they have the same name. You confuse Stuart Copeland with Martin Scorsese.
Italians. Close enough. But are you gonna? Why don't we see if we can find a video of Warren Buffett on stage singing Margaritaville?
I've seen him with the ukulele. I don't know what he's playing.
That's what Warren Buffett does in his downtime from being a billionaire investor and running Berkshire Hathaway.
He moonlights as Jimmy Buffett. Have you ever seen them in the same room together?
You know what? That's a very good point. And he kept the last name Buffett because he would think, no one would think that I would keep the last name Buffett. That's perfect.
That's exactly what they would. That's exactly what they would expect.
You know, if you look it up online, Jimmy Buffett's full name is actually W. Jimmy Buffett. Oh, I noticed all the guys were playing orange amps last night, or orange cabs.
Because... I don't know.
What band was that that we were playing with? I don't remember.
Oh, it was...
It was the Rock and Roll Hotel.
Yeah,
but
I won't mention his name. It was a buddy of mine.
No, but I mean, was it... Was it just like one of the audio engineers there or whatever?
Yeah, it was one of the sound guy.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there setting up, and our one guy is just sitting there rattling on to me about all his gear that he loves, all the gear and everything, because he's the gearhead, and I'm just sitting there setting up, and somehow the conversation turns to Orange Amps, and I mentioned to him, yeah, Orange Amps, they're pretty good. Yeah, I mean, like, all, you know, Tony Iommi, he swears by them, the guy from Black Sabbath, you know, a lot of the big metalheads use them. And in, I can only assume, trying to look like a seasoned, educated gearhead.
Just a really experienced guy. And
yeah.
Whatever.
He says to me, yeah, I tried Orange Amps. I just couldn't get enough distortion out of them. I couldn't get enough overdrive out of them. Not enough gain. You know, I just couldn't get. And... at this point, the sound guy who is on the other side of the stage,
he's probably setting stuff up or something.
Yeah, working with the mics into the snake. He just pauses, and I just see him do this 90-degree head tilt where he just stares at the kid.
It's kind of confusing. Like, did I hear what I think I heard? Yeah.
And the greatest rebuke I've ever heard is just he looks at him as like, "You couldn't get enough gain out of an Orange amp. Do yourself a favor, go buy a pod." Orange amps are like, kind of have the same history as Marshall, except Marshall was far more visible. And so they're a British amp company, and they pretty much grew up the same way as Marshall. If Tony Iommi, the father of metal, swears by these amps, I'm pretty sure you're getting enough overdrive out of those.
You're getting enough gain out of them.
Yeah.
You're getting the sound that you want.
Yeah. So if you're not getting enough gain out of one, you're clearly doing something wrong.
It's both absurd, and it makes you feel kind of bad for people like that, where it's just like,
well,
come on, don't say things like that.
You know, I when I first moved back to town here, I went back up to Hagerstown and played with my old church group with Jared.
Right.
And Jared had me up there, and it was a blast. It was great to see the guys again, great to play with them again. And it was afterward that I was tearing down my amps and stuff that a kid, had to be just a teenager, 16 or whatnot, wandered up to the stage, arms crossed, looking over my pedal board, and did that again. Looked at me and was like doing the whole, "Oh, I see you're running a TS7 there. Is there a reason why you like that over the TS9? I'm like, "No, I liked it." And he's sitting there asking me questions about my board, says I sound good, and I realized I was that kid. I was the one who would wander up and ask that stuff. And you know what? It felt good. It felt good to have somebody walk up and actually ask me about that. And when I was a kid and I did that, I always had this thing in the back of my mind where I was trying not to be annoying about it. I was convinced in my head that this guy did not want to talk to a kid about this stuff. He didn't want to have to humor him about this stuff. But now that I was at that point, I felt fine with it. I was super happy to talk about it.
In all honesty, it was probably good for that one time. But imagine if, like, you're on tour or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got every kid at every show around the country or around the world coming up to you and basically doing that. Then at some point, you can understand why these musicians get to the point where they're like, "I don't even want to talk to you."
Sure.
No offense, but I've probably heard any and everything you're going to tell me. I appreciate the fact that you like my music. I appreciate the fact that you've looked into what I play and whatever. This is the first time you're having this conversation. I have had this same conversation 150 times. Let me just tell you the answers. Yes, no, sometimes my guitar tech does it, and I like to put it on 3.
Right.
There you go. Now let me go to my trailer.
You have to wonder if somebody, the guy who figured that out before anybody else, was probably Neil Peart. You really have to wonder. He's not doing
Neil
it
Peart's
to be,
fantastic.
He's not doing it to be mean. He just genuinely doesn't want to deal with that day in and day out. So he just, rather than fight the equation, he just removes himself from the equation by saying, "I'm just not going to interact with fans." Period.
Did you ever watch that? The documentary.
Oh, yeah.
What the heck was that called? Something
that,
about Limelight or something?
Beyond,
or
Beyond the Lightest Stage or whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I
Did
watched
you
that
ever
lots of times.
See the one thing? I think I'm remembering this wrong, but it's the one thing where.
Well, I think it was Taylor Hawkins. Is that who you're thinking of? Who went backstage to meet Neil?
Yes, that they go back, and it's just this horribly awkward, like, I don't want to be talking to you right now.
And he's like,
all these like cameras around him and stuff.
And he's like, I got faced by Neil Peart.
Oh, yeah.
I got faced by my hero. I don't care.
Like, he knew that that's how Neil Peart was. It's just like, okay, so that's funny that that's what, I forgot that that's what it was, because I thought it was something like, well, maybe there's another section where, like, I think what they did for one of their tours recently, maybe it was for Clockwork Angels or something, where they offered a meet and greet, like a premium ticket package or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if that was part of the documentary, if
I
it
think
was something
it was,
different.
I remember it was always Alex and Getty and that.
Right, and you just like would never see Neil ever. And I remember them being like one clip or something of basically Neil like getting cornered or something by a fan, and he just has this like hilariously awful, like, I do not want to be talking to you right now at all thing. And you can understand when you learn about him that it's just, he's one of those people, just like, I don't want to talk to you. It's not a bad thing. I just have no interest in talking to you at all.
To early on in your career, basically just in your song, tell your fans that, and the fact that the majority of your fans get it and accept it, that's a very special place to achieve. You are beloved by your people, and you know they would do anything for you, but they know to keep their distance.
I mean, if you have the drummer from Foo Fighters, essentially, like, this isn't what it was. I can't think how it actually was, but let me, if you have the drummer from Foo Fighters basically just go against what he's supposed to do and corner him, knowing full well that that's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, and then come out being like, yeah, I got dissed by my hero or whatever. You've clearly done something right. You've gotten people to leave you alone. And if people don't leave you alone, you're essentially allowed to yell at them. And people view that as like a badge of honor.
Right.
Like, how do you get better than that? But I guess that's the same person that wrote all the lyrics for all their stuff too. Yeah. So, which I think we've talked about before, but how hilarious is it for Geddy Lee to get lyrics, like get this book from Neil Peart, and it's like, you want me to sing what? I thought we were going to sing about, like, babes and, like, rock and roll and stuff. You want me to sing about aliens and
trees.
Right, and, like, weird dreams and, like, space stuff, whatever. It's like, I don't know how I'm supposed to do that.
Well, that's how what we were talking about earlier about being able to compartmentalize things to the point that you can absorb everything else. And it soaks into everything. The fact that he was such a voracious reader, Neil Peart, to the point that that's the type of lyrics he wrote, and fans get it. People get it. That's incredible. And it's like when I taught music out in Ohio, I would always tell the guitar students there, if you want to be a good guitarist, listen to other guitar players. If you want to be a great guitarist, stop listening to guitar players and listen to everything else. Because that's how all these guys get their sounds. That's how John McLaughlin from Mahavishnu Orchestra got his sounds, was listening to the Eastern music, imitating sitars and whatnot. That's how Jeff Beck gets his unique phrasing.
As long as you don't talk about George Harrison and that, we'll be good.
Oh, you got
they're out of control.
No,
but the fact that, like you're talking about with Neil Peart, you can take The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand and essentially turn that into
20-minute song, whatever, and have people accept that.
Yeah.
Like, be able to present the concept of the concept found in the Fountainhead in a way that people can understand and relate to. It's just, he's a very unique individual, and it's worked out perfectly for him. The right combination of whatever that has put him in that position.
Yeah. And what we were saying earlier is, like, there's two ways to success. There's the radio way to success. This is how I think of it. And we were talking, the mainstream radio way to success. And then there's just the fly under the radar permanently. And then maybe once gets some type of media attention. Huh. We're talking about The Starting Line with The Best of Me, or Saves the Day with At Your Funeral, and maybe get a video made out of it. Maybe get some MTV airplay back in the day. But, you know, very rarely can you get just, like you said, Shai Hulud. How a band like Shai Hulud or Anvil manages to survive with just 20 dedicated fans or whatnot. And maybe they survive because of the reason that I never go to see the bands I love, because I know what the experience is like. I know that I'm going to be there because I want to hear the music. I want to listen to the band, not for the experience of being in a live setting. So I stay home and listen to the records because that's the part of the band that I like.
And part of the reason why I stopped going to shows or whatever is because I started watching videos on YouTube. It's like full sets or whatever. People will do that. And I very quickly found out from doing that for a while and then going to see a show, I get the exact same thing out of watching that high quality YouTube video as I do being there, and I'm not surrounded by all that. I'm not paying 20 or 30 bucks. I'm not having to drive, 40 minutes around or whatever.
Well, like I was telling you earlier, my Carmela's Game obsession right now.
Yeah.
And the fact that I listen to these albums and I'm like 10 years late to the party in terms of loving this
stuff. You've been 10 years late to the party with about a million things in the last month.
Pretty much. Well, I'm a late bloomer, what can I say? But and then all of a sudden to find a video of this live studio performance they had done, of like a half hour video of them doing a concert and hearing them, watching them play these songs in a live setting, but it's still a recording, and me flipping out like, oh my God, I know this song.
It's like you're there.
Yeah. It's like, I don't need to go and deal with people. I don't need to deal with loud, bad sound issues, standing in line.
Right.
Like, I've only done that. I saw two concerts last year because they were things that I really wanted to see. And one of them was a classical music performance that I saw at the Kennedy Center. Not exactly, the 930 Club, but, and I got there like, at the other concert, it was Zappa Play Zappa in Baltimore.
Oh, I remember that.
And I was just ecstatic that whole time because, you knew these guys weren't there for, like, the experience of a live setting. You knew anybody who went to see this band wasn't there to jump around and have fun. They were there to hear the music. Right. So you were going to get respectful fans who get it.
They actually wanted to pay attention to what was going on.
Right, exactly. And so that's one of the few times I actually said I was going to go to a concert of this. So, and I think there's only one concert I'm going to see this year, and that's coming up in about 2 months or so.
When is that, by the way?
As the end of September.
I need to figure out, because I booked myself to go see another show in September.
Oh, really?
Too. I doubt it's this. There's no way it's the same night, but do you remember when that is?
I want to say the 24th.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a couple weeks before that.
Yeah, that's the only concert I'm going to see, and I cannot believe that. Why was I ever big into music? I never liked going to music stuff. I was never the person who went to concerts. If I went to a concert, it was because I was in a band that was playing that night. So,
well, yeah, and then you would do one of your couple things where it was either play, and then if you couldn't leave, you would essentially go and hide somewhere.
Yeah,
or it would be play. And then our set would be over, and by the time we were broken down, you were just gone.
Yeah.
It's like, which is understandable.
It's like, why do I need to stick around to see this band? I have their CD. I'll just go listen to the CD.
You and I would talk about that same thing where you know, I don't understand why you don't want to go see these guys, why you don't want to go to this thing. And you and this Glenn Gould guy, how you pronounce it?
Gould?
Yeah.
Gould.
Yeah. Have this thing where he just wanted to produce music for himself. He didn't even care if anybody else heard it.
Right.
Is that right or whatever? And that's weird to me. Like, I don't necessarily, I've evolved to the point that I don't need masses of people to hear stuff. But if I create something, I at least want a couple people to hear it before I feel like it's.
Absolutely. No, that's why I did my basement tapes out in Ohio. Not that I ever was able to form a band to play them, but it was just knowing that I was still creating something and just having a little bit of validation. I don't know.
So, speaking, you were talking about Fall Out Boy. You mentioned just briefly something about, you mentioned something about Fall Out Boy, and it got me thinking about an article that I read yesterday or a couple days ago. You know, Alternative Press, that, like, it's an underground.
My mind went to AP, and I'm like Associated Press.
Yeah, no. Oh, man. See, what's hilarious about
too much time on the Yahoo Finance page.
When I first learned about Alternative Press, I thought it was Associated Press.
Okay.
And so I kept seeing these articles and these whatever of like these hardcore bands or these punk bands or whatever, and I was just like, why in the heck is the Associated Press running so much stuff about these bands now? I know it's basically just like a magazine like Rolling Stone for more underground
I remember seeing.
Well, they have award shows. I don't know if this is the first year's award show or whatever. But it's their Associated – or not Associated. There I go again. yes, Associated. Alternative Press Music Awards. But Fall Out Boy won Artist of the Year or something like that or whatever. But
not surprising.
They talked with one of the guys afterwards. So I'll just read this thing real quick. I'm sure reading things is fantastic.
No, it works.
So talking to one of the guys, he says, so your bandmate Pete Wentz has this quote about Fall Out Boy being not necessarily the greatest band in the world, but certainly deserving of being somewhat in the pantheon. Do you think your fan voted win gives that comment some credence?
A lot of big words for a Fall Out Boy.
Oh, right. And the first thing is, I'm not sure what you mean by credence. No, I'm just kidding. But that would be what is a pantheon? No, but so the guy last night goes, Pete makes the more fun, crazy statements. The coolest thing for me about the win was having Saves the Day bring us out after that. Whatever you want to call this scene and our relation to it, that was a really cool moment because of how significant they were to us existing. And in front of the audience, that was so awesome to us. And so that's the type of thing like you were talking about where Saves the Day doesn't, they're not big, but they're really seminal in the sense that they inspire a lot of people. And it's weird that you've got people like Fall Out Boy still talking about them, and Saves the Day isn't going to do anything. Like, there's nothing that's not going to boost them at all. Okay, so another thing they asked him was Chris Connolly, the guy from Saves the Day, was totally beaming when his band introduced your performance. He looked genuinely happy to see Fall Out Boy win. And the Fall Out Boy guy's comment was, he's the nicest dude ever. It's no joke. I would have been in a few grindcore bands and then disappeared from music forever if I hadn't stumbled across Saves the Day. I was thinking about it the other day. I feel like in a lot of ways, Fall Out Boy's success is everybody's success. I don't know what that part means, but
wow.
I think that part's a little cocky where it's like, it's not my, I'm not any more successful because Fall Out Boy exists.
Right.
I like their stuff, but. It's interesting that you cannot be that popular, but at the same time, like you're saying, be huge underground popular.
Yeah.
Whatever. So we either need to like rename this podcast or put like a subtitle to it that's just like two guys in their 20s. Well, I guess I'm 30 now, but two guys in their 20s who think that they're 50 reminisce about their 2 seconds of fame in the Hagerstown underground scene,
right?
And pretend to know anything about music.
Well, you know, I've had a I've had an idea to write like a sort of fictionalized Miles from Sideways version of an account of our time, memoirs of a garage band, and it would include all the drama, all the petty antics, and the what seemed epic at the time drama of a garage band that is destined to go nowhere, but just cannot work that into their mind. And just us talking about this makes me...
What seemed epic at the time is stuff like us sitting on the back of Pat's porch after that show, yeah, being like, all right, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to try for the next 3 months to make it big.
Right.
If we don't make it big by the end of summer, we're just gonna say it's not worth it and just give up.
Right.
It's like, what type of idiot people? Like, it's only something that, you know, a bunch of 19-year-olds can say, or yeah, a bunch of 20-year-olds can
say. We're
going
to try to make it big over the next 3 months, as long as it doesn't work, as long as it doesn't interrupt my 30 hours
right,
a week work schedule.
We're not going to practice anymore.
Right.
We're going to do the same crap that we always did. We're not going to try to pander to the type of audience that would make us successful.
Right.
We're going to keep doing the crap that hasn't gotten us anywhere for the last, you know, 3 years. Yeah. What do we think is going to happen now?
Like I was saying, if we, earlier tonight, if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't. There it is. I had to bring up that phrase.
Well, if I could do it all over again,
I tell you. Boy, I tell you what, if I could do it all over again, I...
You don't know me, that's my purse!
Don't be afraid to shout,
that's my purse!
I would have approached it from a completely different angle. I would have approached it...
That boy ain't right.
And,
okay, so...
An F in English? Bobby, you speak English.
Okay, so anyway, if you could, if at 27 you could do it all over again,
by 27,
if you could do those 5 years all over again,
if I could turn back time, I would.
I could find a way.
You know, Cher said it best.
I'd take back those words that hurt you, and you'd say.
And it's as true today as when Cher first said it, straddling that giant gun on a battleship. I would definitely approach it from more of a business end. You can understand why. One of the things I was involved with in Ohio was the development of a community college 2-year music business associate's degree, and it really makes you realize just how much you didn't know and how much you had no idea how you were going to make it big. You thought you're right.
You thought it was like, I'm going to make awesome music and I'm going to play a couple shows, yeah, and people are just going to know that my stuff is awesome and I'm going to be as big as Pete, yeah, Wentz.
It's like that joke from Scott Pilgrim where it's like, we should have secret shows of our own. And it's like, every show of ours is a secret show.
Every show at, yeah, the lakes is a secret
show.
So
it's like, all we have to do is just gig more. Then it's like, oh, nobody comes to our shows anyway. Do you know what more times nothing is? Nothing.
Right, that's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
Just because you play more doesn't mean more people are suddenly, yeah, going to show up. It's either you're going to continue to play for even less people at the same venues because people are tired of seeing you,
yeah,
or you're going to play in a bunch of different places where nobody knows you. Your name hasn't gotten there. There's no reason for them to know you.
Right.
And there's going to be 3 people there that came to see the other band that may or may, yeah, not stay for you.
So let me rephrase that. Not if I could do it all over again. If anybody is 10 years younger than me and is having the same thoughts that we have been describing here today.
What 20-year-olds are listening to our podcast?
Who knows, man? I don't know the people you're friends with on Facebook.
Really? I'm friends with a bunch of 20-year-olds.
I don't know.
Well, you know, I did meet a couple of cool kids last night at that show.
Hey, there you go.
When they were outside smoking their cigarettes.
You know, their mom let them borrow the CRV for right, the night. They got their gear in the back just in case one of the bands canceled. And it's like, oh, so what band was it that always managed to headline the show by saying, one of our guys isn't going to make it on time. Can we play later?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Like, devious, oh, devious.
Every show is like, he can't make it. He's on his way back from work or something. Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah. It's like, you do understand that all you're doing, we figured this out. This is like the 10th time that you've done, right, this. All you're doing is just trying to headline a show at the Leitersburg Grange, right, Hall.
So if any of you 20-year-olds, 17-year-olds, whatnot, somewhere in that age range, are thinking you're going to make it big. My advice is, if you want to have fun, just keep hanging around your merch table, making inside jokes. Believe me, that's worth it too, because it produces incredible memories. If you want to keep, if you want to make a life out of this for the next 10 years, it's about who you know. It's about who they know, that they can hook you up with who they know. And it's just about making the connections, and you are selling your brand.
And it's about making yourself present.
Yes.
So that you can be at the right place in the right time. Right. So that you can jump on whatever random lucky situations will arise.
I know you think your music is going to change the world. Maybe it will. But what you need to do first is get your brand out there. You are your brand. I know I sound like a marketing person, but that's what you're doing. So you cannot afford to say, my awesome Brazilian jazz / techno reggae mix type brand of music, style of music, is going to change the world. You need to cater to that lowest common denominator, and then maybe you will get to the point that you can go back to that. That's my advice.
It's definitely, it's not about the music. If you want to make it huge, it's not about the music at first. If it's one of those things where it's like, if it does happen to work out with the music or whatever, that's fantastic. But you're not, like, you practicing in your mom's garage with your buddies a couple of times is only going to work if you happen to get super, super lucky and be at the right place at the right time. Otherwise, you're going to play half a dozen shows at a Grange Hall in your hometown and then disappear.
It does not happen like Wayne's World. You will not just randomly attract the attention of some big record producer who is going to walk into your thing and sign on the dotted line for a real good time.
Mm, I like that.
Ought to take his pen.
So I think that we're going to have to put Coheed Episode 2 on hold, or Part 2 or whatever. All right, so what do you think?
What do I think?
You think we're good for the time being?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the whole setup of this was to see where we'd end up going with talking about anything, and unfortunately this time we just haven't gotten around to our topic, so this will be
I'm happier that way anyway, to be honest.
This will be episode 1.5.
It'll be like every episode will be like, this is what we were going to talk about. This is what we did talk about.
Right.
Whoops. Hope you enjoy it. Some of my favorite podcasts that I listen to are two people just hanging out talking.
So, Ian, what did you think of In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3?
I thought it was good and very influential in my enjoyment of the musics.
I thought it was good too. I think this is musics that people will greatly enjoy if they are likings of the musics. Good night.
One thing I found out about that album is that if you turn it on in the parking lot of the Leitersburg Grange Hall, you will end up finishing the album in my parking spot at my apartment in college. You can figure that out for what it's worth.
So, topic for the next episode, driving durations for different albums. Did you know that the distance from Toledo, Ohio to the Pennsylvania state line is the entire duration of the 10th anniversary performance of Les Mis?
Oh, why, no, I did not. That is very good to know.
That's a good teaser for next week. So
is that the one that has the Jonas Brothers guy in
that's
it?
That's the 20th.
Oh, okay.
I was having the same conversation with my girlfriend last week.
Oh, my girlfriend.
Is that the one with the Jonas Brother? Yeah! Congratulations, Les Mis. That's how you're going to be remembered.
Be remembered by mistakenly hiring a Jonas Brother to be in your weird on-stage performance of, we're going to act like we're doing stuff, but we're not doing stuff like we're on the radio, except everyone's going to watch us, and we're going to be in costumes. I still don't understand that.
It's like performance in concert. Oh, come on, guys. You're already on stage with an orchestra in costume. Just record the show.
Just, you guys know the lines. You know where you're supposed to be going.
Right.
Just go there.
We're gonna okay, guys. We're gonna run the entire show tonight, but we're just not gonna have any marks on stage. So just
so good luck. Hope that the spotlights line up right. Or the whatevers. Okay, so I guess we're gonna end this one here. Try again next time. So I think this is a good outline format.
Hey, man, I mean, like you said last time, we're going to grow and evolve naturally, seeing what we become. So
between that and the fact that hopefully we sound a little bit better.
Yeah. I'm definitely crazy excited to talk about this album. We just didn't get around to it tonight.
Whoops.
That's all right. We just, it's been a while since we've hung out the last time we recorded something. So obviously when stuff happens, you just want to talk about
it. True.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in that case, until next time. Hope you enjoyed yourself, and yep, see you then.
Really?
I don't have a sign off. I gotta get a sign off.
We'll find something.
All right, adios.
Later.